I'd like to welcome Liz Bradley. She's a professor of computer science at the University of Colorado in Boulder. And we're joined by David Capps, who is a professor of dance at Hunter College in New York City. And the two of them will be giving a talk titled Concantation, Chaotic Variations. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Now, a choreographer and a computer scientist collaborating on a project that is, I guess, an intersection of science and art. How did you start working together?
Well, one of my students had this idea to apply mathematics to dance, and I have watched a lot of dance, but I didn't know very much beyond that. So I went looking for a choreographer to help me, and David was just across the way on the University of Colorado campus, so I found him.
And what happened next?
David?
Well, I think Liz had some really interesting ideas about taking technological and mathematical ideas that she and her students were working on and applying them to movement. And I was going like, what was that? Because I really didn't have much of a clue, except to the extent that there were similarities with certain procedures that are known in the dance world as perhaps post-Merce Cunningham ideas about shuffling bits of movement around in ways that are thought to be objective as opposed to subjective from the point of the artist. So so I was just curious to see what she was up to.
And the first task was us learning each other's language, which was kind of interesting because I didn't know any of David's terminology, and he didn't know any of mine, so that took us about the first year, didn't it, David?
I think so, you know, because each field has its internal sort of languages and understandings and assumptions, and that was certainly delightful for me to be able to cross out of my familiar territory.
So, as a dancer, what was it that you were actually learning in terms of the computer science world?
Well, I was learning a lot, first of all, about mathematics in terms of the difference between, now Liz should make sure I'm saying this right, but the difference between randomness and chaos, which for me were somewhat equivalent terms. So I had to wrap my head around some of the ideas that she worked on in the higher realms of mathematics, and that took me a while. And then it was interesting to see how those ideas really had intersected or could intersect some more with the postmodern thinking in choreography as well.
And one of the interesting things for me was considering the differences between the ways computers capture motion and the way people think about motion. So the technology that we use to capture the motion, which is the same technology used to animate like the character Gollum in The Lord of the Rings, is called motion capture technology. And it involves sticking reflective balls on the joints of a human dancer and putting him or her in a motion capture studio, which is ringed with cameras. And those cameras together deduce the position in three-dimensional space of each of those markers, just like our eyes deduce the position of something, whether it's in front of something else, by parallax, because we have two eyes spread apart. That allows us to figure out where the third dimension is. These cameras, this ring of cameras, can pick out exactly where in space each of the joints is with the aid of these reflective markers. And then the trick is to use software to deduce from the positions of these markers which is connected to which. So, for example, if you have the ankle marker and the knee marker, you want to connect them, and you don't want to connect with a bone, that is. And you don't want to connect the two knee markers with a bone, or else you get a very strange body.
Right.
And so there's that piece of technology. And then there was the more subjective piece, which is humans don't think about motion from the standpoint of the angles of their joints. They think about, for example, where their hand is when they're picking up a glass or when they're swinging a baseball bat. They don't think about, well, my elbow angle is 46.7 degrees. And so that was another disjunction in the way that the computer's way of forcing us to think was very, very different from the way that the dancers thought.
It's interesting.
That was a very interesting piece of all this.
If they did think that way, they might avoid certain injuries?
Perhaps.
Well, that's an interesting thought, because dancers probably do concern themselves with the details of movement and in different perspectives of movement than what the people that we affectionately call pedestrians do.
So
the angle of 45 degrees at the elbow, we might not think of it so much as a mathematical idea, but we do concern ourselves with the aesthetic construct that comes along with wanting to put the elbow at that angle, and the accuracy with which we are able to perform it once we've conceived of it. So I think that's one place that the dance head and the computer head actually came together once we realized what we were talking about.
Liz, David said just a moment ago that he struggled to come to an understanding of the difference between randomness and chaos. Help us, help our listeners with that.
Okay. Chaos is a co-opted term. It's a very sexy name for a very common form of behavior that involves very, very complex dynamics. Dynamics means move. It comes from the Greek dunamos, to move. So a dynamics is something moving or changing or evolving. And chaotic dynamics is movement or evolution that is very, very complicated in a very specific, mathematically patterned way that is also very, very sensitive. So the canonical example here is what's called the butterfly effect, a butterfly flapping its wings, a very, very small perturbation. A butterfly flapping its wings can set off a hurricane later on, a little bit further away. Now, that's apocryphal, of course, but the idea is correct, that a small tap delivered to a chaotic system can have an enormous effect, and yet there's still a consistent pattern in force. So you could imagine looking at a stream of water going over, say, a rock, and there would be an eddy formed over that rock. The shape of the eddy is patterned. There's a pattern that stays there. But if you were to drop a wood chip in that eddy at two slightly different points, that wood chip would take very, very different paths through the eddy. And that's a good metaphor for thinking about chaos. You have a pattern, which is the geometry of the eddy, and within that pattern, the evolution of the behavior is very, very sensitive to small changes. So that's what chaos is in half a paragraph.
And randomness?
Randomness is complete unpredictability. So if you can imagine just not knowing at all where the wood chip is going to go next, that would be a random system. In a chaotic system, the flow of the water around the eddy tells you where the wood chip is going to go next. It's just very, very sensitive. So randomness comes in a non-deterministic system. Non-deterministic means that the future is not determined from the present. There's no causality. You can't predict exactly where things are going. In a chaotic system, you can predict where they're going, but it's just very, very sensitive to where you are.
Are there any genuinely random systems?
That is a bit of a religious argument. The Schrodinger equations that underlie perhaps everything are probabilistic, so they assume that everything at the very tiniest scales is random, or at least partially random. But many people are uncomfortable with that. It is certainly mathematically true. It's been proven by experiments and over and over and over again. So at the small scales, perhaps things are random. At larger scales, I upset my statistician friends by saying that statistics are actually an admission of your inability to write down the right mathematics. That is being provocative. It's not really true. But I kind of think that if you really worked hard enough, you could figure out, given the state of the world, where the rest of the world is going to go. Now, of course, there are issues there that come in with free will, and there's a big caveat in my preface, if you worked hard enough. No one could ever work hard enough. You know, we can't even simulate the weather. So all of this is a very complicated ball of issues that seems to bring out arguments sometimes.
Liz, when you started working with David, you computer scientist, he dancer, What were you trying to achieve, and how did that evolve?
I like working on the boundaries between fields. I think that that is where science and the other fields are the most fertile. It's also an opportunity to learn about a different field. But the real fun part is taking ideas from one field and figuring out how they, what signature they leave or how they could be applied to ideas from other fields. It's also really fun to learn about the other fields and to try to do a technical translation between the two of them. So, I mean, there are certainly technical aspects of or applications of what we're doing. We could think about training simulators where you would imagine doing the same kind of thing that we did for dance except for a flight simulator. So you want to kind of mix up what the flight simulator throws at a pilot when he or she is in training, but you still want it to be stylistically consonant. So there are applications, but we didn't start out like that. We started out from a pure academic standpoint of let's try to apply these ideas from one field to another.
I would jump in and say that that process of crossing the boundaries quickly for me bore fruit in the way as I started to understand what the theories of chaotic mathematics were and how actually that illuminated for me the choreographic process, which I took perhaps just metaphorically, but when you're trying to create a dance, you're in a way trying to create an eddy out of nothing, but then once you start the dance and sort of establish a certain structure to what you're doing, it becomes, to me, very similar to the descriptions Liz had of chaotic processes, where the choreographer doesn't know what the outcome is going to be, but he or she's attempting to find that eddy or find that pathway of possibilities that eventually result in a dance. But so the mathematical thinking actually helped me kind of understand, I think, better the creative process.
Did you do the kind of things that you have in chaos theory where you apply certain simple rules and then something unexpected comes from that? Or maybe something expected comes from that?
Well, I think that's exactly what for me at least, choreography is. You set yourself in motion either actually in with your body in the studio or with an idea, and I think an important piece of the creative process is not defining or not predefining the outcome, because the task for an artist, for my process, is to put myself in that condition and then to find out what happens when I do that, rather than having a goal that's specific and defined it, that I want to get to.
Right. Do you ever let your dancers put your dancers in that position? And
Certainly. Then there's lots of processes that we bring to the studio where we give verbal images or even give a movement phrase and say, six dancers, okay, everybody make up their own variation, or okay, everybody start in that corner and run in a circle until you bump into somebody. there are various ways that you can put into motion the bodies so that you have a fertile field to harvest movement from. There are lots of different techniques that we study.
We're talking to dancer David Capps and computer scientist Liz Bradley. So on Monday night at the James A. Little Theater, you're going to be presenting a dialogue between, if I'm understanding it correctly, between dancer and computer. What is the nature of that dialogue?
Well, what the piece consists of, it's actually a performance piece. It consists of animated dances composed by a computer, working from original material composed by David, choreographed by David, and captured in a motion capture studio. The computer algorithm that created these variations used the mathematics of chaos to do that. And so there are six chaotic variations, each maybe a minute and a half long. and one original dance piece, a short phrase composed by David. And there are three 10-foot square screens hung in a semicircle, back projected with the computer animations, different combinations, and David in between the three screens, interacting with them in different ways. David, maybe you can say more about the...
So that the dialogue nature of it really has to do not on a moment-to-moment basis, because what I'm doing is set, and what the projections are doing is set, meaning it's being played by the computers. But in the notion of a kind of conversation between the various phrases of movement that have been created from the seed phrase, it's akin to the conversational nature of contrapuntal music, where one line or one voice, it's often called in music, is thought to be really in conversation with another one, not in a way that one dominates or another is simply an accompaniment. But there's what the end perception is a conversation or a dialogue between relatively discrete lines of thought.
The piece is called Concantation, which I had to read several times before I realized it wasn't concatenation. What does concantation mean? Singing together?
well, you caught the drift exactly, because we were tossing around. As far as I know, concantation is actually a made up word,
right?
But it was composed of ideas of concatenation, of enchantment or incantation. I think we were jumbling ideas, somewhat in a free association, but I suppose it would be a chaotic system.
And came up with
that as the best verbal representation to what we were after.
And we also have the reason that there's a slash in that word is because the way that the computer algorithm that's based on chaos creates a variation is it slashes up the original sequence and it jumbles it. And so we were kind of slashing up words and putting them together in a new order, just as the algorithm does to the dance. And so the slash is a bit of an identification of a demarcation, and those demarcations show up really in quite startling ways in the piece, and that's something that we played with a lot in its composition. Because you can imagine if you take a chunk of a dance, and you take another chunk of a dance, and you put them one after the other, there might be some interesting things that happen at the boundary, because the end of the first chunk might be a position that's very different in body space from the position that's at the beginning of the next chunk. And that's part of what we were playing with.
Do you feel, Liz, that you were part of the art of this creation?
Well, David argues that I am.
From my perspective, as someone who didn't have much to do with the mathematics, I would say Liz definitely had a role to play. She has a wonderful eye and a wonderful artistic sense.
Well, thank you.
And it's interesting because I was thinking about I haven't seen this piece and trying to understand what a dialogue with a computer would be like, even one obviously programmed by a human being. It seems like such a different process than the kind of dialogue you would have with another dancer.
And it was interesting watching David as we worked together on this piece, because he kept coming in kind of slightly grouchy because the piece that the computer had composed had been very hard for him to learn.
Right.
And that was very interesting to me. I think it was interesting to you too, David, wasn't it?
Well, it was. It continues to be a thorn for me because it's very hard to remember. Because dancers rely on a certain kind of what we call motor memory or physical kinesthetic knowledge to guide them through whatever their tasks are for the dance. And in this case, because each the phrase itself, the theme phrase, is broken up into discrete motifs, but I can't allow myself to forget that these motifs exist independently. So as I try to remember a phrase of them, it's like trying to remember a phone number that goes on for 20 or 30 digits And then a different one, and then another one, and then another one. So
it's
a challenge performatively that way.
Maybe like trying to understand a series of unrelated words, which would be a lot harder than remembering a sentence.
Right. And exactly. And dancers are fairly familiar with a process like that, that where we create new movement material and so on. But in this case, I can't allow myself to forget where it all came from. So I have to kind of tread lightly between sort of trying to find the kinetic logic, which is often illogic as at the performative level, but remember where I am in the sequence as it relates to everything else.
Do you feel, when all is said and done, that the poetry of this work has the resonance and emotion in it that something came from a purely human source would have?
Well, I'm really curious. This performance in Santa Fe will be the second performance of this particular version of it. We did it in Boulder, Colorado, in January, and anytime you premiere a new work, you really have no idea if it's going to work or not. And the feedback we got was fairly positive. And from the performative state, inside the dance as I do it, when I get to the end, I feel that something is working expressively. But again, that's all really up to the audience to decide.
Liz, do you feel that the work that you're doing together might speak to computer scientists and technical people more than a work that was purely from the dancer's mind?
Well, it gets them in the door. And then once they're in the door, my experience is that the computer science and mathematician kind of people, they come because it's math and chaos and science and animation and motion capture and blah. And then once they're there, they kind of get hooked into the dance. And they start out looking at the screens and trying to think about the mathematics. And over the course of the piece, my colleagues who've come to these works have said that they got sucked over into the dance part. And I think, you know, you can the computer animation is a backdrop in some sense. Yes, it's an active backdrop. Yes, it is organic in the sense that it was made from something that David made. And the making involved chaos, which is another kind of interestingly organic process. But I think if David weren't there interacting with it and going beyond it, I don't think I would call this art. It might be interesting.
Liz and I talked extensively and over the years about this kind of event and the extent to which the mechanics of it, the technology behind it, is relevant at all to the experience of watching it. And I think we both feel that the knowledge of what's going on, as we call it, under the hood, is of supreme interest, or we hope it's of interest, but it's somehow in the vibration between that and the personal presence of a performer in a live time that we hope we're making a piece of art that really uses those things equally, not favoring one or the other.
Liz Bradley is a professor of computer science at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and David Capps is a professor of dance at Hunter College in New York. Thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot.